Please welcome Glenn.
Good evening. How are you all? Anyway, the key change thing really got to me because, okay, the church thing that I've talked on several times, everybody in that church, 750 people, all made key changes in their lives and became normal human beings. They weren't the crooks, they weren't the, you know, drug dealers that they were before, but they became real human beings. And I thought, well, I fit right in with that group. And I thought if you could hear their stories, you would just go, holy cow, because I had 15 years of listening to each and every one of their stories. Out for coffee, they'd tell me a story. So my story tonight is a key change of another individual. I lived at the rest home. The rest home was the hub of the church. It wasn't really a rest home. They called it the rest home. All the calls for the church came there. And so we had to field the calls. Pastor did not want to be called unless it was important. So we had to sort of work it out. Sometimes I was a pastor. Sometimes I was the assistant pastor. Whatever. We had to work it all out and figure it out and take action if necessary. So I really liked living there because it was really exciting, you know, because constantly action was happening, you know. Somebody would call, there's an emergency. Okay, didn't warrant a call to the pastor, so we'd call an elder and we'd rush to the hospital or whatever, you know, or husband and wife were having a battle and we had to rush over there and try to keep the police from becoming involved and try to calm the situation down. So it was like being a secret agent. I just loved it. So I was home for 2 days because I had a horrible cold. Now, I'll never forget that day that I got that stinking call. And there was a guy on the line, and he said, we have a gentleman that needs your help. And I said, why does he need your help? He said, well, I've called every other church in town, and they said they would not help this guy. But they all said that you would because in your church is a bunch of unscrupulous characters, and this guy fits the mold. So we were wondering if you could help out. I said, okay, what's the backstory? He said he just got out of prison. I said, okay. So I jumped in my little Honda and drove right on over and picked him up, brought him back to the rest home, and we're sitting in, I made him a cup of coffee, and we're sitting there just talking, and I'm asking him, you know, about his life and his interests, you know, and stuff. And he's got this long black hair and a big long beard, and he's got covered with prison tats. So I knew this guy was in prison for a long time. So I'm sitting there alone with him. Joy comes home, and she sits down at the table and grabs a cup of coffee. And I ask him, well, what's a prison thing? And then he told me, and then I got scared out of this world because he said, oh, well, when I was 18, I murdered my girlfriend and ended up getting 10 to life. He said, but while I was in prison, I killed my cellmate. And then I did a mafia hit for the mafia, the group that he's with, and I killed another guy. And I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, this guy is evil. And I started, inside my head, I started praying, oh, Jesus, help me, help me, help me, you know. I wasn't all that serious about that Jesus thing, but right then I was serious. I was totally serious. I'm looking at this guy, and I'm thinking, he's the epitome of evil. Oh, my God. Anyway, so Joy was just turning red. And I thought, I don't know, what am I going to do? And then Scott walked in. Scott, this big, huge, hulking man. He's about 28 years old, and he made Paul Bunyan look little. In fact, he could probably go for Paul Bunyan's ox. He was so big. And he came walking in. Little Jaime looks up at him, and he comes in and sits down, and he says, hi, my name's Scott. Jaime just looks at him like he had this look. I couldn't figure out what the look was. We all had coffee, finally determined that he wanted to go to church. He'd heard about Jesus in prison, and he was interested. So I thought, perfect. It was Friday. Took him to church. I'm sitting next to him, big, bad Scott sitting on the other side. We're set. And one of the pastors got up and began talking about his prison because we knew, you know, we set it up because we knew we needed somebody to talk about prison to bring this guy to the altar. So this guy got up. He had spent 5 years in prison. And he began to talk about his life in prison. Of course, Jaime was enjoying this, you know, because it was something he's familiar with. So he got up and gave the altar call. And I looked over at Jaime, and I'm thinking, God help me. And I said, Jaime, would you like to go up and pray? And Jaime looks at me and says, yeah, man, let's go up and pray, man. I said, okay. So Scott and I took him up front. We prayed with that guy for an hour and a half. He got Jesus that night. He got something that night. He spoke in tongues. We got somebody who understood Spanish to make sure he wasn't speaking Spanish. No, he was speaking in the unknown language. We got this guy. Now it was our job, my team, to get this guy saved. I was on team five. Team five, we mobilized. I called all the team members. I said, we got to have a meeting because we got to get this guy saved. We got to keep him. We got him up there. He accepted Jesus, so we got to save him. So we all got together, and okay, he needed a job. He needed a place to live. He only had 3 days left at the place he was at, and they're going to throw him out on the streets. So first of all, need a place to live. What was his name? Robbie. Robbie says, hey, I've got an extra room. I said, okay, this is a guy's story. He said, that's okay. I'm okay with it. I've got Jesus. Thank God Robbie has Jesus. We had a place for the guy to stay. Moved him in. No furniture in there. There was just a bed. So we got the whole team together. There was a team of 120. There were seven teams in the church. Got all the team together, and we scavenged for furniture, and we filled the room full of, you know, sparse but still adequate furniture items. So Jaime set up with a place to live. Now we need to get him a job. A brother has a job for him at a place that makes wiring. So we're set. Okay, we got him a job. But he needs He needs his birth certificate. He needs a California ID. And he needs a social security number. So three of the women on my team said, we'll do that. So that must have been a weird scene. Jaime, you know, covered with all his tats. You know, he cut his hair and shaved. And he wanted us to help him find a suit, which was kind of weird, but I thought there's hope for this guy. So these three women with their children in tow took him down and got all the stuff he needed. He got a job, and two of the women started shadowing him at work to make sure, because he'd never worked a day of his life. You know, he went into prison at 18. He was there for 21 years, never worked a day of his life, never been outside since, half his life in prison. So, okay, so we got him set up. He had a job. Everything was cool. He was good at home, but the problem is he left the door open. He couldn't stand to have a shut door. So when he was there, the door stayed open, the front door through the apartment. And then when he went to bed, Robbie would shut it. But for the most part, the door stayed open. So one day, a cat wandered in, and I came over to do a check on him. And I walk in, and there's a cat wandering around the house. And I said, Jaime, what's this? He said, man, I don't know, man. He just came in. I said, well, does it belong to anybody? He says, I don't know, man. He made this home. So what the hell, man? Hey, can you help me go get some cat food? I got to feed the cat, man. He's hungry. And I looked at him, and I thought, what? Okay, let's go. Put him in my Honda. Got cat food. Got a litter box, one of those things that you scoop up the litter with. Got everything he needed. Oh, and a little play toy, this thing that was about this big to scratch, and a little play toy. And so Jaime had a cat. And apparently, the cat slept with him every night, which I thought was kind of sweet. And I said, Jaime, what is with you and the cat? He says, oh, man, you know what? It's so soft. I never knew anything so soft. I mean, when he's sleeping with me, I put my hand down there, and he purrs. He said, man, it's just really cold. I said, okay, that's great. Okay. So we got his birth certificate, right? So we knew his birthday. His birthday was in 2 weeks, so I got everybody at the rest home. I got the whole team together. We're going to have a birthday party for Jaime. Okay. Everybody was excited. Everybody liked Jaime. So birthday comes up. Go get Jaime. Bring him over to the house. Pop the door open. Everybody jumps up, starts singing, happy birthday, Jaime, happy birthday. And I look at Jaime, and he doesn't look happy. He's just standing there looking at everybody. And then there's a cake. We put it on a little game table, and there's some presents around the cake. Jaime walks up, grabs a table, and throws it to the other side of the room and runs out. So I'm going, the hell was that? So Scott and I chased him down, found him about two blocks later. He's sitting on the corner. And so I cautiously walk up, and I say, Jaime, are you okay? He says, what was that, man? I said, it was a birthday party. He says, what is that? I said, it's a birthday party. He said, what am I supposed to do? And I said, okay, I'm going to explain it to you. So calm down. First of all, you come in. There's a cake. People say happy birthday, and they sing you happy birthday. Then you light the candles on the cake, and you blow the candles out and make a wish. Then you open up your presents, and we all have coffee and cake and enjoy your birthday. And Jaime says, that's all there is to it?
I said, that's all there is to it. He said, oh, all right, man, I kind of blew it, huh? I said, okay, we're going to do a replay. We're going to do it all over again. We're just pretend like it didn't happen. Let's go back to the house. Scooped up the cake, put it back on the plate, put the candles in it, grabbed the presents, put them back up on the table, lit the candles, and then Jaime goes, what do I wish for, man? I said, I don't know. Whatever you want to wish for. He said, well, will it come true? And I said, I don't know. It may and it may not. It's just something you do on your birthday. He said, oh, all right. Do I need to tell you? And I said, no, just blow out the candles. They're melting down. So he blew out the candles. We scooped cake up on plates, had coffee. That was Jaime's birthday. Really enjoyed it. Who had known that he'd never had a birthday party in his entire life? I mean, he was raised by a pimp and hookers, and all of his brothers and sisters were in gangs. I mean, he had a horrendous life in L.A. So we had a barbecue at the beach. I'll never forget this as long as I live. Where I'm getting ready the barbecue. We're going to have pork ribs, and we're, you know, busy with that. And then my wife walks up to me. She says, hey, Glenn. And I said, what? And she says, look over there. And I look over there, and Jaime is standing in the water. And she said, maybe you go check. He's been standing there for a long time. So I walked out, headed on over, and I said, Jaime, what's up? And he goes, oh, man, this is beautiful. Man, it looks like it's alive. And I said, Jaime, you've never seen the ocean before? You lived in L.A.? You never went to the ocean? No, man, I saw it on the movies and stuff, but, man, this is unreal. It's, like, big. And I said, holy cow. Okay, come on back to me. He spent the rest of the day playing with the little kids, making sand castles. That's what he did. And it was amazing the parents were okay with that, but he was like a little kid, and I just love this guy. So I continued doing spot checks. He actually met a woman in church that he liked, and so they were together. You had to, whenever you found somebody, you had to have a chaperone, so we weren't worried about it. He did the chaperone thing, so we were chaperones on a couple occasions with him. And so I went over to check on him one day. He was doing great, you know, no complaints, working, paying tithes and offerings, helping with all the church activities. So I go over, and he says, hey, man, brother, I got a problem. I said, what's your problem? He says, man, you know that guy across the street? He has a dog, and it keeps me up all night, man. It's really pissing me off. And I said, Jaime, did you go over and talk to him? Yeah, man, he told me to F off. I don't like that guy. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, you know, this is a new level. I don't like this level. I said, Jaime, let's go talk to him. So we walked over, knocked on the door. The guy opened the door and goes, you again, get off my effing porch. Get out of here. I'll call the cops. And I said, well, sir, you know, we could probably call the cops on you. The dog's barking around. Get out of here! I said, okay, fine. So I went back to the house. I could tell Jaime was a little bit put off by that. And I said, Jaime, you know, don't kill the guy. It's okay. It's okay. You know, let's go get you some earplugs. So he went to get him some earplugs, and I showed him how to put them in his ears. He said, I'll give this a try. And I said, okay. So 3 days later, I go over to his house, and the guy that told us to get off the effing porch is sitting in Jaime's apartment, and they're playing cards and drinking coffee. And I walk into the surreal scene, and I'm thinking, what the hell happened here? This guy that told us to get off his effing porch is sitting with Jaime playing cards. And I said, hi. The guy's name was, I think it was George or something. He says, hi, my name's George, dude. And I said, okay. I said, Jaime, we need to talk. So we stepped outside, took a little walk, and I said, Jaime, what's the deal? He said, oh, man, you know what? That poor dog of his, man, ended up running away, and, you know, I felt bad for him, you know? He came over looking for his dog, and I thought I'd try to help him out, you know? So I invited him over that night, and I made a nice stew, you know, and everything was good, you know? And the guy kind of likes me, and you told me to make new friends, right? And so, I mean, this guy may be a possible friend, you know? And it's kind of cool. And I said, okay, Jaime, what really happened to the dog? I said, I just told you, man. Don't you trust me? And I said, Jaime, I'm not saying anything about trust or anything else. I'm just concerned that this dog locked up in the backyard somehow got away and ran away. So, Jaime, what happened to the dog? And he said, oh, man, well, you know, the dog kind of had an accident. And I said, what kind of accident? Well, you know, he kind of got dead. And then I said, Jaime, did you kill that man's dog? He said, yeah, not only that, I cut it up and I put it in the stew. And I was grossed out to the max, and I said, Jaime, you can't
do that kind of crap. That's inhumane for the poor dog. And Jaime says, yeah, no, man, you know what? He started crying. And I said, he said, I feel bad about it, man. I mean, I wish I could take it back. I wish I could take it back. And you know what? For a psychopath, that's pretty damn good. Holy shit. And he said, I feel bad for that guy, man. We made like little flyers and we're going to put them around the neighborhood. And I'm thinking, you're putting flyers around for a dog that's already dead. You know he's dead, but you're going to put flyers around because it makes this guy feel good. And I thought, breakthrough, how grotesque it may seem, we just had a breakthrough with Jaime. He's concerned about somebody else's feelings for once in his entire freaking life. Key change. Thank you.